everyone. Thanks for joining our Executive Perspective series featuring the White House Executive Order and more. Today's session is called WHEO Foundational Concept, Threat Intelligence Sharing to Drive Predictive Security. Our speakers for today are Brianna Farrow, Principal Engineer and Global Technical Director at McAfee, John Amorosi, Solutions Architect and Cybersecurity Strategist at McAfee, and Jason White, Solutions Architect at McAfee. At this time, I'd like to pass it off to them.
Hello, thank you for joining our latest podcast in our series on the White House Executive Order number 14028, Improving the Nation's Cybersecurity. As previously mentioned, my name is Jason White, Senior Solutions Architect for McAfee Federal, and I'm joined today by Brianna Farrow, McAfee Principal Engineer and Global Technical Director for McAfee Endpoint, Platform, and Threat Intelligence Products, as well as John Amorosi, McAfee Solutions Architect and Cybersecurity Strategist. Thank you both for joining me today. If you haven't had a chance to listen to McAfee's previous podcast on this executive order, I encourage you to do so. The format of this podcast, like the previous one, will be a panel discussion with me posing questions to John and Brianna as panelists. Today, we're going to be focusing specifically on Section 2 of Executive Order 14028 that aims at establishing improved threat sharing by eliminating contracting hurdles for government partners and contractors that impede sharing of agency-specific threat data, and also by creating expanded logging requirements, mandatory reporting scenarios, and standards-based incident sharing. John, my first question is for you. How will enhanced threat sharing improve the government's cybersecurity? Given the government's broad catalog of business partners across multiple market segments, is unidirectional sharing going to be enough? Or should the government consider making threat sharing bidirectional?
Thank you, Jason, for the question. That's certainly very topical for this particular executive order. Tackling the challenge of improving cyber threat intelligence certainly needs to be a multi-pronged approach. Historically, threat intelligence sharing has often been a one-way push and a unidirectional informational sharing for organizations to consume, add to their existing tools, maybe perform additional investigation, and try to make sure they triage those appropriate threats that are known. Although that data has been proven valuable, the adversary has continued to push the envelope and expand their tradecraft beyond the speed at which these traditional solutions are able to meet the demand. So as threat intelligence solutions evolve, they do need to become a two-way street so that organizations can proactively gain awareness into what active campaigns are uniquely targeting their vertical and how best to tune those particular countermeasures to respond to these threats in a more near real-time fashion. Other strategies for agencies to consider is how to empower their security technology stack to not only as the engine for protection, but be able to actively participate in sharing potentially malicious content with other sensor classes throughout the enterprise. This in turn allows the establishment of a local threat intelligence database that's unique for that particular agency. By taking this approach, this set of capabilities should be automated as much as possible to reduce the mean time to detection within the organization. For example, if a threat first encountered on an endpoint could be evaluated by multiple detection engines up to and including the sandbox technology, as part of a bidirectional security communications fabric, if a malicious file were to be convicted, that reputation should automatically be known and propagated throughout all the other connected clients in the enterprise, further reducing potential attack surface.
And John, I mean, we have never, ever, ever in any organization seen any sort of process or bureaucracy hold up any sort of sharing, right?
Not at all.
I think it's a good point. You know, we're looking to make sure that we're thinking about the sharing of threat intelligence differently. And that's part of what we're all talking about here today.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. So Brianna, there's been some talk that this particular executive order is a reaction to the SolarWinds supply chain attack that made headlines earlier this year, which makes sense since it largely affected federal customers. But early warnings could have prevented wider spread attacks. What changes have you seen in the industry since these attacks? And what role could cross-sector threat intelligence have played in limiting the impact in a supply chain attack like that?
Yes, Jason. I mean, the biggest thing that I think I and we have seen is more of these attacks. You know, for a long time, organizations and entities were discussing how these types of attacks could occur, how critical they could be to infrastructure. Even in our own space, we have been participants in some of these types of scenarios in the worldwide warfare on this type of a situation. But in specifics, you know, we've seen the Kaseya attack just recently happen as well, which was very much around using the concept of a supply chain and how information and management is being distributed to others using a service. And that's been really something that is kicking up. I mean, even the MITRE evaluations, the Ingenuity evaluations that McAfee participates in, we've seen that the upcoming round four evaluation is going to be all about ransomware. Mm-hmm. And that's because it's being used so widely now and so available, being distributed and supplied as a service to attackers to sign up to or sign up for almost as a subcontractor to leverage in these types of attacks. From a threat intelligence perspective, it goes back to what John was saying. The more information that I have that I can correlate, and that's where it really comes into play. Me knowing about an IP address that an endpoint connected to, and John knowing that that endpoint was definitely attacked and infected, believe it or not, that's a huge correlation. If it's an external IP address that I wouldn't normally be seeing in my environment, and there's no reason for communication to occur to, I see that happen once, but I can't pinpoint what's communicating to it, or I don't know that something definitively happened to the endpoint that was doing so. I may think that it's some sort of an anomaly or a misconfiguration in my environment that allowed that to happen. But when John knows that his system got infected by it and it caused a serious situation, our sharing of that information is critical to not just us being better protected and being able to stop attacks earlier in their life cycle, but telling everybody else so that they can prevent those attacks moving forward as well. And that's really what we've started to see is all organizations, regardless of what type of business you do, starting to change that mindset. And I think the executive order is a perfect example of that, where you're saying, listen, the way we've done business in the past, it's not going to cut it. We have to start thinking about how we can share while still being private about the items that we need to.
Sure. Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, the more information you have, right, the better you can ultimately protect your systems. So.
Like those, the more you know commercials.
Yeah, exactly.
You have to remember those, right? But
yeah, those NBC PSAs, right? Mm-hmm. So hey, John, if we all agree that improving threat sharing is a great first step for the government, but the next step should be focusing on how to enable threat sharing bidirectionally. Given your role as an architect, does the technology for rapidly sharing data across industry segments exist today? What would it look like?
Great question. So fortunately, it does exist today, and certainly dovetails into one of the key tenets that McAfee has tried to pioneer over several years and evangelize to essentially reach the point where we have an open ecosystem and allow for a multitude of security technologies to be as extensible and flexible as possible so that other vendors as well as other complementary security technologies can benefit from the threat intelligence that either we generate or other third parties can be incorporated throughout that particular ecosystem. So one of those particular mechanisms that we use to share threat intelligence is called the data exchange layer, or DXL for short. It's a very lightweight, high-speed, publish-subscribe communications fabric that security solutions can use to distribute new information as it becomes available and is made known. And so one of the first technologies that we built to actually leverage DXL was our threat intelligence exchange, which essentially acts as a local database within the agency to centralize that reputation data that can inform all the other various downstream DXL clients that are subscribing to that information, whether a file becomes known malicious or potentially known good. So several of our various customers and even some of our EE customers have kind of taken the next step to be able to further operationalize that particular threat intelligence, not just within their core network, but with other federated entities or partner organizations and communities that they also participate with. And so one of these particular solutions is known as a threat intelligence platform, such as MISP, and TIPS are able to actually aggregate, correlate, and tag various different threat events in a centralized manner. So based on the various different organizational rules, that particular types of threat data can be shared and distributed and actually made actionable by those other downstream entities. And what makes this pretty powerful is not only are you getting the benefit of that two-way sharing of data throughout all these various different other community partners, but you can actually task additional workflows that can be further automated above and beyond what may just be considered a known good. So examples might be being able to perform a real-time search for enterprises using an EDR solution. Maybe it's even updating their network security gateways to block malicious URLs, domains, or even IP addresses. and even incorporate various different analytics reports from a sandbox solution so that you have more detailed IOCs to share with the other partners.
Yeah, I mean, I can see
that actionability, right, John, that we were talking about. Sorry, Jason, you know, that at actionability is what you want to get out of the threat intelligence. Yeah. What does this mean to me? A big box of mail doesn't do anything for me. I need to be able to action on it. And you know, John, you probably remember this. When we first came out with the data exchange layer, we used to describe it as kind of like the human body and the central nervous system, because it was that message highway, right? The same way that a neuron is firing information and actions and commands to the rest of the body, if it doesn't have a way to quickly get all those pieces there and respond, like I touch a hot stove and my body needs to tell me, pull back, you're being silly, you're touching something hot, stop doing that. If I don't have that actionability and that responsiveness at that same speed, it's not very effective. But I need to be able to do it outside of my body. I need to be able to touch something else and have that same actionability and response. So that actionability is key, and that ability to pull in not just your data or your particular sources, but your entire security architecture, right?
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like context is important, but what you ultimately are able to do with the data that you've collected is equal to or more important, right? It's great to have a bunch of information, but if I don't know how to put it into motion and actually do something with it, it really doesn't do me any good having that data.
Yeah, like I'm in analogy mode today, Jason, sorry. So just one more, but when you're looking at the signs that tell you to walk or don't walk, you know, they've changed a lot of those to have a number countdown, right? Yeah. Because people used to make the decision on their own, like, can I go? It's flashing. Now, you know, I have 15 seconds or I have 2. And with that context, you can make a better decision on your action. 15, how fast are you? You could probably make it 2, probably not so much.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. And it sounds like there's a lot that the federal government could even learn from what some of our EU customers are doing with threat intelligence. So that's great. Kind of along that same kind of vein, Brianna, in your role as global tech director for McAfee, you've had the opportunity to work with several McAfee customers across every industry vertical. Kind of gives you a unique perspective, I think. So my understanding is that the financial sector, despite competing interests, have partnered together to share data. Can you explain that? Do you have an example where that's proven valuable? Are there other instances where you think sharing threat intelligence cross-sector like that could have proven valuable?
Absolutely. So I did work with a lot of financial customers at one point, particularly before I became a tech director when I was a sales engineer. And it was interesting to see. They knew that in their market space, they were a little bit more unique with the type of business they did, the type of equities that they handled. And so they recognized that other organizations and even vendors couldn't always help them understand what was going to happen to them in the threat space before it did. A lot of times they were targeted first. And this really created this kind of camaraderie, to your point, in the spirit of competition still, of connecting together and understanding where they needed to discuss common ground, common challenges they were coming up against with regulatory compliance, what that meant for security and architecture, and then ultimately what it meant in the threat space. And so through organizations like FSISAC, they would have feeds, like actual threat feeds of where they would share information, or they could bounce information off of each other to share it in a safe place where it was confidential to them, so that one organization or entity could give a heads up to another about things that they were seeing, especially when potentially an attack was going to do something like follow the sun model in a day, or it was going to target a certain organization first or a certain section of financial transactions. And we saw that that was very, very helpful for them, because it really allowed them to be better prepared to withstand an attack. Because even if it wasn't the exact same IOC that they received from a business partner, they were actually able to understand and test out what that IOC would have been doing, or what that file and that attack methodology would have been doing. And they could adjust their countermeasures to that, whether it was the exact same attack that was coming out or not. And that's huge with things like ransomware. So yeah, I think it's hugely helpful and could be helpful with other spaces when even vendors like us share information about what we see around ransomware attack types. You don't have to tweak and change your countermeasures to match that exact ransomware entity and actor and methodology. It's going to be common. The tools are going to be common. The attack vectors and the exploit methods are going to be common. So your ability to take that information and that countermeasure and observable information and apply it in your organization is really, really key.
Yeah, you know, I'd imagine too, just given the fact that the government isn't just a standalone entity, right? They've got business partners across multiple sectors that, and what that ultimately does is many of those can even connect into government networks, right? It ultimately attacks or extends their attack surface, right? So the more there, it's very important to government understand threat intelligence within their own environment, but being able to enable those partners, I'd imagine, would have, you know, pay dividends for them and ultimately protecting their tax service, right?
Absolutely. And similarly, in the financial space, sometimes some of those entities had to transact information between each other, right? If they were closing out, you know, one mortgage to another or something to that example. And very similarly, they might just have business partners or information they need to share on a given basis from a compliance perspective with something like a government entity. So even there, they needed to make sure that they were protecting themselves and their partners from transmitting threats or bad information back and forth that could cause or lead to an exploit or an attack. And so exactly, that was critically important. And it was how they helped implement that in those workflows as well.
Yeah, that's great. It's good that there's industry examples that the government can potentially lean on to get some additional insights. So John, one thing that, you know, McAfee has been trying to draw out as part of our response to the executive order 14028 is that many of the individual capabilities that they're asking agencies to deliver on, they all kind of feel like pieces of building a successful zero trust architecture, which is, you know, also specifically identified in the EO. So how does a robust threat intelligence layer relate to building a successful zero trust architecture?
They certainly do relate and should work in tandem, especially given the nature of you know, where zero trust is trying to get our agencies to. And so one of the core, I think, tenets of the way in which we approach integrating or, you know, having those combined synergies between zero trust as well as threat intelligence is as agencies begin their journey and continue to explore various different components of zero trust in their enterprise, it absolutely should continue to play a key role in informing those policy decision processes as to whether a user gains access to a particular application or resource. So in the past, a decision as whether or not you gained access to a SaaS application was relatively static. And so now, with, you know, given the nature of all of the various different exploits and you know, vulnerabilities that we're seeing every day, being able to incorporate this threat intelligence from a multitude of different sources and have multiple mechanisms, especially as they become more diverse, and to be able to play a role in actually informing the way in which those policy enforcement points are able to incorporate and leverage those additional threat intelligence sources prior to granting access. So I think those two pieces, especially combined with device posture assessment, taking a far more dynamic approach in evaluating risk using those agency threat intelligence sources, will be able to provide significant benefits overall, especially when trying to incorporate both components of the executive board.
Yeah, I'd imagine that becomes even more important too, as more and more of agency assets are no longer within the traditional perimeter, right? I mean, as more and more people are being granted access to specific resources, being able to evaluate identity trust and entity trust is probably going to be fairly critical to protecting those assets, wouldn't you think?
Agreed. And I would say, even taking it one step further, we really need to be engineering and designing and building our architecture, really assuming that our primary assets and a lot of our very highly sensitive data, it is no longer really contained or constrained within the traditional four walls of the perimeter, and it needs to be outside of the on the actual endpoints themselves or where the actual data resides, whether that be in the cloud.
Sure, makes sense.
Yeah, John, I mean, I think we need to make that assumption, right? Is that at some point it's going to land there. And even as we move towards things like desktop as a service, things like ZTNA become even more critical. And it's interesting because ZTNA is not necessarily a brand new concept. It's been something that's been looked at for a while, and especially in the government space. I mean, there you could argue that they've written the guidelines behind what a truly ZTNA architecture is. But it needs to be flexible nowadays. It can't be as rigid as it was. And so the best way to be able to allow access to authorized resources with following that model is to not just have that access list and that authorization list like we used to have, as you mentioned. It goes back to that context, Jason, that you were mentioning before. The more context I have about something will allow me to provide that flexibility of when you should have access to something, even though you're authorized to it and have been granted access, and when you should not, based on, like John said, where maybe where your device source is, or if yesterday your device was fine and today it's infected.
Yeah, no, it makes a lot of sense. So, you know, Brianna, McAfee has a pretty extensive history of collecting threat data. I mean, I've been here for 14 years now, and GTI has been part of our vernacular for as long as I can remember, right? And so, and through the threat feeds and the research organization that we have, you know, leveraging historical data to build better technology has kind of been in the fiber of who we are, right? So I'd be remiss if I didn't draw a parallel between what the government's attempting to do in creating their own threat intelligence data lake and what McAfee's done with Envision Insights. So can you explain how McAfee's improved our own methods of threat intelligence through that particular platform? Are there lessons learned the government could benefit from? Or is there an opportunity to partner with the federal government to potentially improve their own data lakes, or in the spirit of being bidirectional, improve insights?
Absolutely. I mean, again, I think just in that bidirectional aspect, it goes back to, if you're not putting data in, it can't be assessed in a certain way, right? It's just not physically possible. We can only do limited assessment with what you have within your four walls, like John mentioned. And we can't give you comparatives that assessment may not even be, is it a threat or not? That's something that may be accomplishable within your four walls. But whether or not you're the only one who's seen it, or there's 1,000 other people who woke up yesterday and saw it, and now it's becoming more critical, is really the differentiator there. So I do think the concept of understanding when and how to share information and where that might be viable, and working together with the government to understand where that is viable to provide them even better data back and analysis back is really critically important. On top of that, in the spirit of the executive order, whatever they share helps protect others as well, right? So that's critical as far as just, I guess, our security morality or whatever you would want to call it around that side of the fence. But specific to kind of what we've recently done with it with Envision Insights, you know, I would also encourage the government to, exactly like you said, look at what we've done. For a long time, we had, I don't even want to know what the terabyte or whatever petabyte storage of data is. I'm sure it's some like zygobyte or something that I don't even know the term for that we've had. And we had this data and we used it to analyze whether or not there was a larger threat, whether or not there were correlations, whether or not we could put campaign information together, all of the things that you just mentioned, Jason. But that actionability that John was talking about earlier, that ability to translate that to something into really easy context for a customer, and to have them have some automation and avoid having to call us to find out if we had intelligence and what it meant, is not something we had taken the next step to. And we did. We finally did. We said, let's start with a basic concept and then grow from there. Instead of our customer having to call me and ask if they're protected from the latest malware that just ran with the Kaseya, you know, piece of attack, can I just tell them in a way that's easily accessible, that's accessible through a threat feed, like John mentioned, that's in my dashboard, like you mentioned, that I can take out into a different workflow, whether that's MISP or some sort of other part of my security architecture. So check one, let's solve that problem. And we did, right? We said, well, we can tell you that we know about this, and these are the IOCs and the observables, and this is the coverage we have for it across these different components. But then why stop there? Yes, that solves one problem, but there's so much more that you can do with that data. And we looked at it in the sense of the fact of how can we help with that shift left concept, right? McAfee's never abandoned the concept of protection first before detection. And so why wouldn't we continue with that? And why can't we help? Why can't I tell John that not only is the IOC he's searching for related to a campaign, but he has systems that could protect against it if they had a different configuration in place? Because, you know, sometimes we put configurations in place and we kind of set them and forget them, and we're not always updating them to what they could be to provide the best security posture. So why can't I do that? And the answer is I could. There wasn't an answer as to why couldn't I. There were only answers as to why I could. And so that's what we did. We took a look at that and said, I want to be able to tell John that DarkSide as a ransomware as a service is this type of campaign. It's sponsored by these threat groups and attackers. This is how it functions. These are the operating systems it can run on. Here's typical subcontractors, areas of the world that it's been seen in. Here are the tools it commonly uses, the exploit methods, and here's ways that you can protect against it. Here's valid countermeasures, signatures, YARA rules, et cetera. And more importantly, you have systems that either have seen an attack, you've gotten a detection, and you've either handled it or not, and or you have systems that could be attacked by these known IOCs and methodologies. And if you just flip this switch, you'll be protected with your countermeasures in place. So, you know, to us, that's really a method that could be grown upon. It could be grown at a local database, like John mentioned. You could take that in threat intelligence and understand what is the prescriptiveness that you could provide and the actionability that you could provide on top of it.
Yeah, well, one of the things that I really like about that platform too, and it was kind of referenced as something that John mentioned earlier too, which is taking that threat intelligence data and then making it, you know, real-time searchable within your environment too, right? The ability to integrate that across EDR and XDR platforms to say, okay, here's an emerging threat. I don't see any alerts yet, but let me go out and see if it might be resident in my environment. I think that's a pretty powerful tool to get really proactive in terms of trying to identify those threats before they make a major impact.
Absolutely. And I mean, with those searches in a typical hunt scenario, you get some data, maybe it's from a feed or a tip, right? And you might take action to search upon those, but you wouldn't get that prescriptiveness to understand, okay, it's in my environment, but is it, am I at risk anywhere else? So now we have kind of that two-prong approach that, like you said, I have in one place to take action on from multiple mindsets.
Yeah, no, that's great. So, hey, I really want to thank you guys both again for your time. But before we go, you know, before we kind of got on here, we kind of talked about giving you guys kind of one last opportunity for any final thoughts. And I think we agreed that Brianna would provide those final thoughts. So I just, you know, want to give you an opportunity here. Do you have anything else that you'd like to offer up, either about the executive order or threat intelligence specifically, before we say adieu?
Well, John, Jason, always feel free to jump in here. This is a team effort, but I think the executive order for me was such a positive thing to see. I was really excited to see that a lot of the initiatives that, in my opinion, the government had actually already been looking to take were putting down into some sort of formal statement that was a guideline, but that it allowed all entities to have a guideline to move off of. So you wouldn't have different parties trying to execute that in different ways. But also where potentially one organization wasn't necessarily getting the support that they needed to move forward with a project like that, now it's a requirement. So there should be no reason why there's not support given. And again, for me, I only see benefit there in understanding ways that even if it were just government entities to government entities as a starting point, that data sharing could not possibly provide a better opportunity for the organizations to protect themselves. And since these government entities are protecting some of the most absolutely critical things that we have here, at least within the US, it's really important. But it's a lesson that can be shared amongst, like John said, multiple government entities. And it's things that they could all talk about together.
I should say, you got to start somewhere, right? And so,
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, it provides kind of, I just think, a little bit more of that open opportunity for sharing experiences as well, which is a really good statement to make.
Yep.
From a lead executive government perspective. The last thing is just around those kind of key points that we talked about. As you start to think about this executive order in this particular section and how am I going to take on this threat intelligence component, again, try to think about your threat intelligence maybe a little bit differently than you have before. If you've been in other types of government with military, think about how you would strategize around anything in the first place. How do I use my threat intelligence today? What types of threat intelligence am I not receiving? Would there be benefit to that? Do I have gaps? And if I just sat down at the table with another entity or a vendor to understand what types of threat intelligence they see and analyze and where that could be beneficial, maybe I should take that step to at least understand how it could help me. And I want to look for that actionability. I want context that provides correlation that gives me that actionability, because without that actionability and flexibility, I can't move into the modern workspace where I'm going to have data coming from areas that it was not before, that were not restricted by four walls, and successfully have a flexible working environment that's secure.
Yeah, that makes sense. Great. Well, hey, thank you both again. You know, I've enjoyed our conversation today, and I think it's been really insightful. Before we go, I do want to put a quick plug in for our next event in this particular series. We're going to focus on improved detection and response. I think John's going to be writing a blog that's going to be coming out in a couple of weeks. But in addition to that, McAfee is going to be hosting a Capture the Flag event on July 28th. That's going to give people a great overview of our EDR capabilities. Not only that, but it's also going to give them the opportunity to test drive the solution in a little bit of a fun way. So registration's now open, and we encourage all who are interested to attend that. You know, your registration for this event should result in you receiving an invitation for that event. But thank you for attending today, and we look forward to helping you succeed as you work to meet the requirements of the executive order.
Thanks so much. Have a great day, everyone.
Thank you.
I'd like to take the time to thank our speakers for joining us today. To learn more, please visit www.mcafee.com/public sector. If anyone has any follow-up questions, please reach out to McAfee Marketing at carisoft.com. Thank you for listening in and have a great day.